Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Support for the Adam Carolla Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. With rising interest rates, there's a lot of unpredictability, a lot of anxiety out there. Our friends at Quicken Loans are doing something about that. The power buying process. They'll verify your income, assets, credit in under 24 hours and give you a verified approval. Then you have the strength of cash buyer, which is important when you're out there in the real world. Once verified, you qualify for the all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. They'll lock in your rate up to 90 days while you shop. If rates go up, your rate stays the same. But if rates go down, your rate drops. You can't lose, man. Either way, you're going to win. Get started today. Go to rocketmortgage.com/Adam. That's rocketmortgage.com/Adam. Dawson.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, former undercover FBI agent Michael R. McGowan and author Ralph Pizzullo. With Gina Gratt on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and a phone call from Adam Ray. And now, he walked down the hall. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for telling a friend. Just saw the ratings that went up over the week, and it's because you guys were sharing the show with a friend. So tell them it's free, and go ahead and give it to them. Thank you. Good day, Gina Gratt.
Good day to you.
And Bald Brian. Is there any way you can eat pussy and do the laundry? I just got back from the Family Guy.
What?
I did a little voiceover work.
He's done the show before, Gina.
I know.
Family Guy.
No, I'm familiar. This is very exciting.
It is. It's fun because my son is coming online. One of the fun things that you guys who have younger kids can look forward to is your kids start coming online. Mm-hmm. And they start getting jokes, right, and discovering things that you knew about or were a part of in a different lifetime, and your favorite shows like The Simpsons or The Family Guys, which of course they don't enjoy when they're five. They start discovering it, and then you can start showing them your favorite episodes and
they get it
and all that stuff. And I dropped off my son at his friend's house, who lives on the top of Mount Olympus. I was explaining to you guys this yesterday when we were running late for the Arclight movie theater, and the kid was like watching The Family Guy, and he was going, "Oh, this is one of my favorite episodes, Death Lives." And my son was like,
mind.
"That's my dad." And they just start getting into it. So you get to have these little exchanges where you're son is watching Family Guy, and then you go, "Oh, tomorrow I'm heading in and doing a little voiceover over there." Now, it's funny, a couple side notes. Michael Narron, the guy who did all the pro bono cartoons and artwork and everything for us, and had Dr. Drew and Loveline and all those cool, funny bits and all the stuff, all the countless hours that guy put in. Just, I don't know that there's anything more tedious than animation alone.
Probably
you know, not,
not
a whole army of, you know, of North Koreans who are, you know, guy pounding a drum and another guy snapping a whip and a leather gimp mask and they're all riding away.
That's how it goes.
This is just Michael alone, you know, no computers, no nothing, just drawing it at his mom's house in New York. And after all those years, at some point, he just said, like, "I'm out here. Can you put in a word with the Family Guy?" And or Family Guy. Somebody yelled at me for calling it the Family Guy. And he was like on his way to the airport. And I've told you guys the story before. I said, just meet me at the building at noon. Like, what time's your flight? He's like, 4 o'clock. And I'm like, just meet me there. And I met him there and got him up there and got him into somebody's office and said, like, open your portfolio or show him the stuff you did for Loveline. God, that was 5 years ago, seven years ago. I just walk in there today and there he is. Doing his animation.
Right.
And I was like, how's it going over here? He's like, it's the best. And I'm like, what are you working on? And he's like, I'm working on the Thanksgiving episode for 2019.
That's funny.
Like, I'm not this Thanksgiving, right. The next Thanksgiving. And he's privy to all, he gets to see all the episodes before anyone else gets to see the episodes. And the place is like sort of a, let's just say it would be like working at a frat house without all the overt sexuality. Like a frat house meets a bouncy castle. You know, there's like food everywhere and there's jokes everywhere. And one of the things that's everywhere is now cracked me up. And I'll tell you about it in a second. Quicken Loans first, rocketmortgage.com/Adam. I want to thank them for this half of the show. Bespoke Post, I'll tell you about their boxofawesome.com. You can enter Adam. Castrol Challenge, you can tweet us your questions at Adam Carolla Show. And we'll take that challenge and betonline.ag. And enter Podcast One. I'll tell you about that in a second. So, as you know, when I would do the Family Guy years ago, Brian and I and Gina were up the street on the same side of the street. We were one building away. I mean, where we KLSX was walk across a small street and be at Family Guy. And that's literally the next building on Wilshire was and is Family Guy. They're still there.
When they needed a voice for death, they said, who's within walking
distance? Who is in walking?
And they Bonaducci. Go,
like, Norm MacDonald was too far out of range. So I...
You were frosty.
I showed up. And, God, there was a flow. There's a Norm MacDonald joke from probably season one or season two when Norm was death. And he, like, showed up at Peter Griffin's house, and Peter, like, took off running, and he just went, hey, I caught Flojo. I can catch you. And we're going, like, it's God, it's so edgy. It's crazy edgy. Florence Griffin Joyner had probably died 2 years earlier or something.
At
age 42. Yeah. Like, insane. Like, it's insane that they would make that joke.
But it worked.
Well, look, as a guy who's a fan of jokes and an atheist, it made me laugh. When did Flojo die? I mean, she must have died in her early 40s, right?
If that, yeah, world-class athlete at the 88 Olympics or 92 even. Whatever, you know, whatever it was, it wasn't that much before.
She's 38.
Really? 38?
She died in 98.
She died in 98. She was known for, you know, the big nails and the hair and everything.
Also for winning some medals.
I've narrowed it down to black women all over America.
She's known for her nails and her hair.
How dare you? Because in a field.
Reductress, leave us alone.
No. Here's what I'm saying. How dare you?
I know.
That was her trademark. Yes. That was her trademark.
It was, yes, it was separated from any other number.
Right. Yes. She won all the medals and known for the glitz and the nails and everything. Died at 38. And died in 98, and Family Guy couldn't have been much later than 2000. I mean, if it was Norm doing it.
I remember specifically. It was like in development in like 99 and came out, I think, 2000, like right around when I finished college.
They made this, and considering they'd make them a year in advance, this had to be a year away from FloJo dying.
Yeah, I met Walter Murphy, the guy who does the song, the theme song. I met him while he was doing the theme song for this new animated show. It's called Family Guy, and I had seen promos for it. And I was like, oh, it looks really good. Can I check it out? And now he's a multi-billionaire from that, you know, that theme song running 50 times a day around the world.
Who sings the song Wildfire?
I don't know, but Walter Murphy was famous for doing A Fifth of Beethoven off of the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack.
That's how we... different guy. Michael Murphy.
But Walter Murphy
brother.
Was
his
famous
Murphy
for
mom
that.
Is very proud. So you can find out about when Norm did that or Family Guy or whatever, but very close, very edgy. Anyway, so we worked across the street, and they would have me come in, and oftentimes the work was... just a word or two, because after they finish animating, you go and you do your initial VO session. And then when they're done, initially, I went in to a place in Studio City, a sort of nondescript, smaller commercial building right next door to sort of Gelson's in Studio City off of Laurel Canyon. So then they moved it to Mid-Wilshire. And then at some point, they'd come in and you'd have to just... pick up a couple of words, a couple of lines. And it was always like, you'd say like, I don't know about that. And then they go, oh, give us three. And you go, I don't know about that. Thank you.
I got it.
And then they go, I don't know about that.
I don't know about that.
And then you'd go, I don't know about that. You know, and you just go, all right, here's three different, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
And I would finish... radio at 10, and we would hang out, have a little post-mortem with Jimmy Brusca, talking about things being a lot of fun. Like exciting, a lot of fun.
I was a little late on that one.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And
it's a great show. A lot of fun.
That's directly from our post-show meeting.
and then at like 10:30, 10:45, we did like go, I'm going home. And Family Guy would always go, can you lay down this voice over? And I'd go, sure, I'll be there at 10:45. I'll just finish up and go there. And then they would go, Seth doesn't come in until noon. And I'd go, and I think Seth's thing back then is he drank a little too much scotch and he just slept in. He's famously famous because he missed his flight out of Logan that went to the first tower.
Yeah.
So, he would get in at noonish, you know, and I'd be across the street going, well, I'm in purgatory because I'm not going to lunch and I'm tired and I want to get on with whatever. I'm writing a book or doing something. I want to get on with it. I don't want to really wait for Seth.
And here's Damage, like, let's get Domingos.
Yeah, at over IHop. At the IHOP. So I would say, why don't I just come over and I'll just, it's a couple of words. I'll just say the couple of words. I'll say...
give you three takes, five takes.
I'll give them five takes. And they'd be like, yeah, Seth really needs to be here. And I'd be like, why? Just someone read me in and I'll do it. Yeah, but Seth wants to... he just... we don't want to... yeah, anyway. Now, the funny part is I would wait and then Seth would show up at like 12:35 or something. And then he would sit... on the other side of the booth, just like what we're looking at here. I'd be over here. He'd be over there. And it was fun because I'd always make him do, like, he'd mail in Peter Griffin because he wasn't being recorded, but he would read you in, you know. But
full lot of honkies in here.
But I would always go, like, hey, Seth, if I'm going to go 100%, I need you at 100% too. Like, you can't mail it in. Yeah. We're reading together. So he would always kind of laugh, and he would do a big Peter, or big Stewie, big whatever. So, but I kept saying, like, hey, he doesn't need to be here. He doesn't need to be here. And I walked in today, and there were a bunch of, like, missing person posters, and it was pictures of him saying, not seen since 2016.
That's good.
And like, they're making jokes that he's never. And I'm like, how are we doing this now? And he's like, ah, he's never here. And I'm like,
just do what you got to do.
Right. Do it, don't do
and,
it.
And I'm always like, all right, but I am the guy who said we could have done this way several years ago, which is sort of how all of life works. Yeah. Like, it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. Whatever. Pot being legal or whatever. Gay marriage or whatever. It's like, it's a big deal. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. Yeah. And then it's like, it's not big deal.
Nobody cares.
Nobody cares. And you're like, I get it. But why was it such a big deal in the past?
Why the time?
Why do we burn so many calories? And so I went in there and it's funny. I the guy said, you want me to read with you? And I said, yeah, I do. It's easier when you do it. And I said, how's your Peter? And he's like, it's pretty good, actually. Yeah. Like the guy,
I've been doing this a long time.
I think the guy's been doing it for a while now. So he did it.
Does anyone ever need to read you in with allowance?
Oh, thanks, Lois.
No problem.
God, you're so quietly good at not being quiet.
Oh, thank you.
No, with those voices, it's pretty amazing.
Thank you.
It's a gift. And I mean a gift. The people who can do it are gifted. On a sad Seth MacFarlane note, You guys are probably used to this by now, but I was sitting at the computer on Sunday night, and I got the, you're invited to Seth MacFarlane's birthday party at coolest hotel in the world.
Yeah.
And I was like,
how are we going to fit the Mangria tent in there?
And I was like, oh. And my first impulse is, everybody gives you more than a week's heads up on a birthday party evite. And then my second impulse was, fuck, not Seth. Like, his stuff is short.
Yep.
His stuff is short.
Birthday party tonight.
And then my next impulse was, where am I Saturday? And the answer is Phoenix, stand up live this Saturday. Doing
You've
basic
already pushed
cable
that show once.
Commentary. Adam Ray is going to be up on stage with us, by the way. And I thought, and then I just, it didn't have the date or anything on it. It was like, please join us. Yeah. And I was like, I know it's this Saturday. And then this other part of me went, it's less than a week. It's less than a week. You got to give people 10 days or 2 weeks or something. Okay, maybe it's Friday. Was that my next impulse? I just clicked down and it was like, this Saturday. And I was like,
of course.
Damn it.
I know you're not a big believer in blaming other people and, accusing other people that they just don't like you. But at this point, are you taking this a little personally? Because you'd have every right to. It's almost like he's doing it on
purpose. When it started happening originally, I was going out almost every weekend and doing a show. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't.
He checks your calendar.
Go to
AdamCarolla.com.
Well, now I believe he is.
Yeah,
now I believe he is. I'm saying initially, if you're going to be out every weekend, you can't go.
It's on you.
Why is it always land on the weekend? I'm out of town. Right. If you're out 41 weekends out of the year, it's going to land on a weekend. You're out. Last Saturday was Politicon, out of there by 3 p.m. The weekend before was real estate wealth summit, motivational, whatever, out of there by 4:30 p.m. Could have made it. Yeah. Anyway, so we'll miss hobnobbing with the stars.
Brutal.
Had a interesting talk with the receptionist over there. Which is, I just walk, she buzzes you through the door, and then she goes, how you doing? You go, doing good. And then she goes, well, how are you doing? She goes, well, doing good. And then we
We're
start.
We live this in real time?
Real time.
Scintillating.
Then she
Have
said.
Have a seat over there. Any chair? Anyone will do.
Any cold water for you?
Is that candy free?
Not the red chair. The leg's broken.
But then she said, I don't know, am I really happy or just saying, doing good or whatever? And I said, no, it's an issue. And I'll use it as an excuse and a segue to share it with people. It is one of my favorite Dennis Prager things, which is you got to work at being happy. And you do owe it to those around you, like you owe brushing your teeth and hygiene and things of that nature. Like, oh, okay, I don't want to stink up the room with my BO or my bad teeth or whatever it is. Same thing with happiness.
Yeah. Stinking up with your bad attitude.
You kind of owe it to your coworkers and your family and your neighbors to at least put on the facade of happiness. And then if you put on the facade of it, you essentially are. It's weird.
Speak it into existence, essentially. Yeah,
yes, it is a weird thing. You start saying to people when they ask how you're doing, say fantastic. Don't say okay or whatever it is. And it will just become a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so I said, I don't know. Happiness is an interesting subject. And I think people think you're either happy or you're not happy. And some people are unhappy and some people are happy. But you can work at it. It can be a thing.
Yeah.
And you can take it and treat it like physical fitness. You know what I mean? Like some people have a little better genes than others, but you can watch your diet, and you can exercise, and you can drop the pounds, and you can get the energy, and you can do it. And so she went, huh, who is this guy? I said, it's Dennis Prager. I said, look him up. I think you'll enjoy the happiness hour. I said, okay. I did my voiceover stuff. And then I came back, and she was watching an online video of him giving a lecture on being happy. And she was like, oh, yeah, I get
it.
Makes a difference.
Nice.
And check out somebody listening to you.
What's that like?
That's cool.
How was that feeling?
It was insane. It had to be. If I was dropping off bottled water, I don't think she would have done it. It had to be because I was doing a voiceover.
You had a little juice.
She listened. She said something funny that I kind of forgot about, which is the, and I can't remember the exact phrasing that Dennis uses, but there's the moody, you know, the moody people, the people in the bad mood. Mm-hmm. They don't hook up with a fellow moody.
Right.
They know. Yeah. It's weird because, like, hey, who's your team? The Rams. Good. I'd like to marry someone who likes the Rams. Or what kind of food do you enjoy? I enjoy Thai food. Good. Marry someone who enjoys Thai food. You'll be enjoying. The moody don't even want the moody.
Yeah.
The moody realize what a pain in the ass the moody are. And so the moody, when they hook up the moody, are miserable. Yeah. And now we have two miserable people. The moody will hook up with an upbeat person.
Yeah. Someone to siphon off of.
And that upbeat person will constantly try to pull them out of their mood.
Yes.
They're the cold virus. They're not going to attach themselves to other viruses. Right. They're going to go after the healthy cells.
Right. And it is kind of an indictment of the moody that even the moody don't want the moody.
Right. They don't want each other.
Yeah. Or eventually you get Kurt Cobain and Courtney Love, or you get what's the name from the Sex Pistols? You get Sid Nancy.
That's well.
Or the Junkie. Whatever.
Yeah. I think that's a lot of addiction.
But Look at happiness as a goal.
Well, and like I've said, my entire life, I've never heard my dad answer this question any other way. When someone goes, "Hey, how are you, Steve?" He always goes, "Always great."
Love
I've
it.
Never heard another response.
Biggest, it's such a, again, I always talk about how free it is and how easy it is and how, you know, whenever I walk in the house, I see Sonny or Natalia, I'm like, "Hey, look at Steve." You know, like, why not?
No.
I don't mean it. Who cares?
They don't have to know that.
This funny thing I was talking about, Sonny coming online and getting into the Family Guy, and he was watching my episode from a million years ago. I think it's called Death Lives. And he started laughing at this line where, "I'm Death. I come home. I have a mother. She's a shrew. Mm-hmm. She's yelling at me the whole time." And like, me and Peter go upstairs, and I'm like, "Oh God, she's a pain in the ass." And she's screaming like, "Oh, zip up your fly, or a seagull will get you," or whatever it is. And I go, "God, I wish Dad was still dead." And I improvised it. It wasn't in the script. The script was just like, "Oh, she's a pain in the ass." I just kind of added it on, like, "God, I wish Dad was still dead." And I asked Sonny, like, "Do you get why that joke's funny?" And he's like, "Yeah, I get it. You're death and she's death. And so Dad," normally people say, "I wish Dad was still alive." But I said, "Go over there and pitch that joke to Olga. Like, get get Olga to understand that joke." And he took about 20 minutes.
Oh, boy.
Now,
that'd be fun to watch.
To be fair, she tunes him out. Because there's literally, Lynette and I sat and listened from the other room while Olga was like folding clothes, and Sonny spoke about every team's NBA lineup without inhaling for 25 minutes straight.
Poor
and without Olga making a sound back at him. He just literally talked her ears off about Kawhi Leonard and all these other guys taking deep dives into all these
the
players.
D-League.
Yes, developmental league and European league. And like, never. And he didn't even take a breath. I was just listening from the other room. I was like, never. Never stop. So to be fair to her, she's in big time tune out mode. Then Lynette had to snipe. "I wonder where he got that from."
Nice.
Yeah, nice.
It's hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
It's hurtful. It cuts two ways.
Mm-hmm. Well, put myself in a better mood. Talk to you about Bespoke Post. I love getting my box of awesome from Bespoke Post every month. I got my favorite items. They're great. These are first world gifts. If you like your booze, you like your cigars, you like the outdoor life. I got my knife right here. This side, I'm gonna think I would take this thing with me and put it in my car in case I got to open a box or a carjacker.
Carry on.
It is a nice item. Visit boxawesome.com and answer a few questions. Help them get a feel for your style. Each box goes for under $50, has more than $70 worth of good stuff in it, unique gear. On the first each month, you'll receive an email with the details. You got 5 days to change your color sizes, add extra goods. And if you're not feeling it, then you simply skip it. No pressure. Good gift coming up on Christmas. Good gift to get somebody. And it just keeps giving. Bespoke boasts. Boxofawesome.com. How about it, Dawson?
To receive 20% off your first subscription box, go to boxofawesome.com and enter promo code Adam at checkout. That's boxofawesome.com. Promo code Adam for 20% off your first box. Bespoke post. Themed boxes for guys that give a damn.
All right. Let's see. Adam Ray is going to be calling in a couple of few. I got... I don't know why I was thinking about this, but it kind of made me laugh. I was watching Marr's show last week, and he was bringing on the panel. He was introducing the panel, and one of the guests was a professor at Princeton who wrote a book, African-American Studies guy. Mm-hmm. I'll play the clip, but it just made me think of something.
He's a professor of religion and African-American studies at Princeton University, whose latest book is Democracy in Black, How Race Still Enslaves the American Soul. Eddie Glaude, Jr., great to see you.
All right, so it still enslaves the American soul. And then I started thinking about David Alan Greer's dad, who wrote a book called Black Rage in 1968.
He did.
Damn.
Co-authored.
He was a professor at Berkeley, I do believe, and in 1968. I'm sure he wrote the same book this guy wrote in 1968, and now it's been 50 years, and we're still writing books on this country and racism. Now, I don't know what you fill it with, because I feel like the history part, everyone's got a pretty good idea of. Oh, I'm looking at a picture of young William H. Greer. This is a great story. I think they grew up in Detroit, and at some point, the late 60s and early 70s, just basically, the message was, if it feels good, do it, and if it tastes good, chew it. Dawson, that's how Dawson lives his life.
I love that. That needs to be on a t-shirt.
Probably was.
So, there was this whole kind of thing, which is, kids are basically just young adults who need to go out there and kind of experience life for themselves, right. A.K.A. I don't want to raise my fucking kids. Let them go out and raise themselves. They're 12. They're old enough to know better. So it's this weird thing, a weird thing that happened in the late 60s and then the early 70s, which was kids got elevated to adults and adults got driven down to kids. So the deal was, is if you don't feel like doing this or paying this or working for the man or buying your kids this or taking them there or doing whatever, don't do it.
Sounds familiar.
You got to live your truth,
it
man.
Feels like it's happening
yeah.
again.
Yeah, you got to do your own thing.
Yeah.
And what that caused is a lot of guys going, yeah, it's kind of a hassle hanging around with the same old lady and banging her every other weekend and these kids always wanting money and everything. So a lot of people went like, what would be fun? Fuck it. I'm going to Berkeley. I'm going to get a waterbed. I'm going to be a professor. I'm going to bang some students. I'm going to enjoy myself. And
to be fair, that does sound better.
It's the life, yeah.
Yeah.
It is, and it's a pretty narcissistic endeavor. But it was a whole kind of a movement, and you're seeing it, what's old is new again, is like go out and do your thing, live your truth, and that's living your truth. Mm-hmm. And that's not the part where you save up for college or take your kids to super boring soccer games and the tournaments that last all fucking weekend and you end up trapped in Orange County. No, no, no. What do you want to do? You want to get high? You want to hang out? You want a good time?
Yeah.
You want to party? Then
sure
you do it
that's
because
great.
That's what this is about. And your kid... it's just a little adult who's going to basically find his way. Yep. Not only will they find their way, they need to find their way. Yep. So
they'll be better off.
That's how they spread their wings.
Yeah. I've always thought that the hippie thing was kind of, it was thinly veiled depression and narcissism. Like, I want to do what I want to do.
I got to get out of here.
Yeah, and that's kind of what happened in the 70s. And it does not help society. It does not help your kids. I don't know how it helped David Allen's career, who got left back in Detroit. But his dad split to Berkeley and wrote himself a book called Black Rage.
How was Politicon?
Oh, it was good.
Speaking of Black Rage.
Black Rage.
I've seen some clips. And
I got up there with my favorite, Clay Aiken. Just love Clay Aiken. And
nothing says Politicon.
Like Clay Aiken. No, he ran for governor?
I was talking about you.
Oh, me. Yeah. What did he run for? Governor?
South Carolina?
I'm going to say so. It was great seeing him again. Funny, when we were done, well, two things are funny. Mike August, like, God, that Clay Aiken, man, that guy's got it going on, man. That guy needs a podcast. I was like, I've been telling you, that guy's sharp as shit for 5 years. And he's like, yeah, no, but he's good. I'm like, yeah, I know.
I'm telling you.
That's what I've been saying. And he's like, yeah, but he's good. I'm like, yeah, I know. That's what I've been saying. Also, at some point, we showed a clip. We had this funny... not funny, haha, but this is get used to life kind of thing, which is we showed a couple of clips from No Safe Spaces, this new thing I'm working on with Prager. It's coming out early next year, but it's got a bunch of Van Joneses and Alan Dershowitz eyes and Cornelius, what's his name? The guy calls everyone brother.
Yeah.
I forgot. I know you're talking
with the ascot and the
right. But it's pretty broad around the spectrum. But they all agree in free speech, which is kind of the gist. But I said, I don't want my kids to. I think the worst thing you could do to your kid is make them feel like a victim. I just think that's hobbling. I've said it many times. And I said in this clip or something, like, I'd rather my kid have spina bifida than feel like a victim. And then after the event, a nice middle-aged woman came up to me and said, I really enjoyed what you had to say, and I enjoyed the clips. The spina bifida part's got to go. And I said, why? And she said, because it's bad.
Oh.
It's really bad. And I said, I know. I was in front of an audience at a college giving a speech, and I said, I'd rather my kid have spina bifida than feel like a victim, because it was something as bad as an example of something I could think of my child to have. And she goes, yeah, it's bad, so it should go. And I'm like,
you're kind of missing the point.
Got a new editor.
I understand point, it's bad, and now I also understand that you may know somebody whose child suffers from this, or maybe even your own child. It's not an indictment of spina bifida, or maybe it is. I'm trying to pick up if I picked oral herpes or bacne or something, it wouldn't be this.
The
fact that you're telling me how bad it is lets me know that I made a good choice. And she's like, it needs to go. And I'm like, okay.
She's also kind of unintentionally making your point, or
she's
at least the point.
Very unintentionally,
me.
Very just, making my
you
point.
You may not like
making
it,
making to my
it,
point.
Yeah, doesn't it mean that it can't be spoken, you know, in the world, that you may not like it and you can disagree, and that's your prerogative.
She's also making my point that when I am saying spina bifida is bad, she's saying it's bad. She's
agreed.
Making both points. But anyway, that's kind of the new. Also, I don't know what their success rate is of, like, walking up to guys who've made films that are already in the can and explaining to them, hey, go ahead and change that one part.
Adam, hang back a second. I have some thoughts.
I have notes.
Yeah.
I have notes. I'll see you in the bay. I'll see you in the bay on Monday morning. Like, I don't know. Does it happen very often where people go, noted, I'm going to go ahead and modify my film? Or they go, oh, thank you, sweet nuttiness.
She starts to rattle off all the moments in movies she impacted.
Yes. All right. Adam Ray is on line 5.
Cornell West.
Cornell.
Is that who we're talking about? Thank you.
It
just popped
Cornelius,
into my head.
There you go. We should start a rumor that he's Kanye West's dad.
Ooh,
I would go for that. That's
I would
good.
Go for that, too.
I heard that, too, dude.
Adam Ray?
Hey, fellas. Hey, gals.
Hey.
Thanks for joining. Adam's going to be in Phoenix. What is the comedy festival that's going on in Phoenix?
So it's the All Things Comedy Festival. That's where Brad and I have a bout last night. Bert Kreischer's got his podcast. Bill Burr's got his podcast there. A lot of podcasts, a lot of funny people. And, you know, where do most of the funny people go once a year to all hang out? Phoenix.
Phoenix. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Sure.
Yeah, Phoenix is the last time I was in Phoenix, I thought I saw Cher at the baggage claim.
Right.
So there's, which, you know, I don't know if you've ever almost thinking you've seen Cher, but, you know, it's a weird thing goes through your body where you're like, A, I didn't know I was going to be this excited to potentially see her.
Mm-hmm.
B, that's definitely not Cher. C, you know, that's like a 5'10". Korean man who just has big hair.
I was gonna say that.
I'm very hungover, and my is that Cher dar is not as strong as I thought it was.
I Cher has got to be one of you guys can tell me. Is there any other person where if you mistake that person for the person and it's not that person, they have a dick?
Yeah.
Like, I don't, like, there may be people who go, oh, I think, is that Adam Carolla? No, it's Gilbert Godfrey. Right, but we both still have dicks.
Right.
It wouldn't be Elaine Boozler, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird that if it's not actually Cher, it's a dude.
It's a dude.
Ooh, Dolly Parton?
How dare you?
I would like to tell Cher that. Like, do you find it insulting that if somebody thinks they see you and it's not you 87% of the time, it's a dude?
Leslie Jones?
Yeah. It's a little bit of an indictment. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how I should take that. Yeah, nobody's like, hey, is that John Stamos? No, it's Bonnie Hunt.
Right. So you're going to come out.
Also,
yes.
Yeah, I'm going to be out there. Yeah, so the festival's, I mean, this is it's a pretty killer festival. It's the second year, but the guys that run, you know, Stand Up Live and Tempe Improv and the whole, you know, scene down there just crush it. And it's going to be a blast. You know, I'm going to be doing the show shows with you guys on Saturday, which I'm pumped for.
I don't know if you've seen Red Dawn. I don't know if you've seen Cobra. You've probably seen Karate Kid. I hope you've seen Roadhouse.
I've seen Karate Kid. And I have seen Roadhouse. The last time I saw Roadhouse, I think I was probably, shit, man, I'm going to say 9. I think my dad showed it to me.
That's not a movie for a 9-year-old.
In a weird, like, your mom said I couldn't show you this, but I'm going to, you know, fuck her. You know, like, I think that was the first. I don't know if he said that. I might be paraphrasing what he said before he showed it to me. But yeah, that's the last time I saw that. I know it has to do with Swayze, and there's there's a big bar fight. And,
well, I
ran out of Sour Patch Kids.
I always think when I watch movies like Roadhouse, I always think about the characters like, you know, the bar guy who starts the fight kind of thing. I don't think about that guy as a character in this movie. I think about the real
version
of this guy. And then I think about how his life would work. So, like, here's who that guy is. Your lady friend gets up on a table, a cocktail table, and starts dancing and shaking her ass. At some point,
yikes.
Swayze, who works security at the Roadhouse, comes up to her and, like, puts his hand out and goes, we need you to step off the table, ma'am. And then that guy pulls out a switchblade and lunges at Swayze. Now, if you're just that guy... aren't you in jail or in the morgue?
Yeah,
how did you make it to 36?
Yeah.
Like, if that's you,
that's
you
your
must,
instinct.
You must not get to your mailbox without fucking attacking a gardener or a mailman, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't see how you could have much future as that guy. Mm-hmm.
Also, a lot of people don't know this, but the guy with the switchblade was played by Cher.
Oh,
wow.
Shit.
I got IMDb that shit. So
yeah, you got to go back and do your research.
I haven't
seen Red Dawn, so I'm very fired up to see that.
Another Swayze vehicle.
It is good.
Yeah.
There's I'll help
full Swayze, huh?
I'll help you do your homework, but
okay, good.
What's his name? God, Harry Dean Stanton.
Right.
Harry,
ooh.
You can nobody does beleaguered like Harry Dean Stanton.
That's right.
Look no further than Pretty in Pink.
Hoosiers,
you know what I mean?
Pretty in Pink.
Yeah, I mean, nobody does beleaguered. Yeah. Like, you can do crotchety and crusty and angry, but nobody does like, oh, God, Jesus Christ, why am I way
put upon?
Like, he opens his eyes
bathroom.
In the morning. It's like, oh, really? Yep. Another day?
Yes.
That's how the shower birds are singing.
Right.
Bags under his eyes.
He gets captured by the Ruskies or whoever, the central... Latins, Americans who are fighting on the Ruskies' behalf or whatever it is. The plot's a little tough. And Harry Dean is like, and he's in like a concentration camp. And the kids sneak over to see him at night. Now, the kids are living up in the hills. Mm. And it's pretty risky to head down into town and find the kids and find the parents that are being held in the camp because they got guards and dogs and everything else. It's a fool's errand, but they love their dad so much. They're going to go see the dad. We'll play the audio here. You can listen to it.
No, that was just a still.
Oh, it's a still. Sorry. Great. Oh, then I'll just tell you what happened. So it's like they come down and he's like, "What are you boys
under the dark of night?
What are you boys doing here?" And he's like, "We wanted to see your dad." And he's like, "Don't ever cry. Don't ever cry." And it's like, "Where's your mom?" "I don't know. I think she's being gang raped in tent 13."
Oh,
and she's like, "He's like, what?" But he's like, "Shh. You shouldn't be here. You shouldn't be here." And then they're like, "We love you, Dad." And then they start to walk away. They get like 6 feet away, and he starts yelling, "Avenge me!
Avenge me, boys!
Avenge me!" And I was like, "Oh, God. Would you shut the fuck
up? Spotlights, dogs."
Yes, like, shh, quiet.
We're keeping the sub rosa.
Yeah,
I bet he improvised that. Because it was in the script, him screaming, "Avenge me," at the top of his lungs. Someone would have went,
Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I wonder how much improv is allowed in a movie where a concentration camp is one of the main locations.
I know in my heart of heart that the entire Swayze speech to the young kids saying, "Let it turn, let it turn," when they're all crying and angry, and that's pure Swayze.
That's from the heart.
Just let it turn to something else, okay?
Oh boy, Adam, you're gonna be over the moon.
Can't wait.
And you're also going to marvel at Mike August's comfort on stage. You and I, we do the stage for a living. Mike doesn't go up on stage, has no thoughts about going up on stage.
A Seinfeldian level of confidence.
Yes.
On a scale of 1 to severely uncomfortable, how is Mike, what is he at when he's up there?
He's at a 0 discomfort level. He has
no pulse.
He has no pulse. He has no poise. He's just on stage. Like, it makes no never mind to him.
He could be waiting for a bus.
Yeah.
Yes. He has no nerve
like
endings.
He's like a kid who has a dream about having to go up and do his bar mitzvah, but he's like, "Wait, I haven't even practiced.
I don't know my Haftorah."
The one of the things that is most telling about Mike is he doesn't know when he's going to sneeze. And
oh God,
he has
that is
he's
a great
that he is that disconnected
from himself.
From himself, and that's what gives him the courage. Look. I have a 110-pound lab named Phil. Would Phil be nervous to go out on stage? No. Phil doesn't know and doesn't care. That's why I say that about Mike. We were driving to the Irvine Improv once. His sneezes are semisonic and explosive, and if you're sitting next to him in a car, it'll scare the shit out of you if he sneezes out of nowhere. And I said, "Mike, could I get just a 2-second heads up so I don't plots myself when you sneeze?" And he goes, "I don't know when I'm going to sneeze." I said, "You may not know days before. I'm not asking
that
for an email. I'm saying, give me a tap on the thigh. That means a sneeze is coming in the next 2 seconds." He's like, "I don't know, 2 seconds. Like
even an earthquake has 12 seconds.
Like the earthquake alert app. Like all I need is 8 seconds.
Exactly.
I can get to the doorway."
Now, just to piggyback on that bodily function awareness, does he have any sort of idea when he's going to, fart, cum, laugh?
Adam,
you know what I'm saying?
I can tell you firsthand about the coming. I cannot tell you about the farting.
It was a long list of days.
It'd be nice for loved ones and other patrons and public spaces to know. I think he has full control over that. He just has no idea when he's going to sneeze.
48 hours from now, from this moment, coming.
That's right. So Adam Ray will be up on stage. Let's plug, and he'll be up on stage, Stand Up Live, and that'll be this Saturday with us doing basic cable commentary. Red Dawn, Cobra, Karate Kid, Roadhouse. What shall I give your pod a plug?
Yeah, it'd be great. Yeah, we're doing About Last Night with Brad and I live at Stand Up Live at 7:30 on Thursday the 25th with Frank Caliendo and Bert Kreischer.
Nice.
And yeah, we're just going to go crazy for about 90 minutes. So tickets at standuplive.com for that.
Do that, and then take a nap, and then come see us Saturday night. Always excited to see you, my friend, Adam Ray. We'll see you Saturday night.
I can't wait. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Good dude, right?
He's the best.
We talk about, at the beginning of the show, being in a good mood?
Yeah.
Ever see Adam Ray in anything other than the great mood?
No.
Or Brian?
No. And Brian, have you done their podcast?
I have.
I have, too, and it's so fun, and they're so disarming, and just so pleasant.
It's a good vibe.
Yeah.
All right, let me tell you about Castrol Edge. You can tweet us your Castrol Challenge, hashtag Castrol Challenge, with your questions about Castrol, the challenge. You give us your question, I'll answer it on the air. Brought to you by Castrol Edge, formulated with fluid titanium technology, reduces friction, maximizes engine performance. Three times, fool! Stronger against viscosity breakdown than leading full synthetic. What do you got, Max Pata?
All right, at CareFord on Instagram wants to know, hashtag Castrol Challenge, if you had to get rid of all of your cars except one, which one would you keep and why?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, the 935 is great and all, but Newman only drove it twice, although it drove it at Le Mans. Pretty exciting. And then there's his last GT1 championship car. That's the one he won his last championship in. And I think I would keep that car, being a Paul Newman fan. And the headrest has the PLN embroidered in it. Actually, that's in the 2+2 car, but I would pull that off of that car and stick it on to his 300ZX, his last GT1 championship car. I go by and look at those cars, and I see, like, the steering wheel with the tape on it where he kind of wanted it, mm-hmm. and the stuff worn in a little, and Sharpies with little arrows and stuff, and I went, that's
good story.
Paul living his life in that place. All right. So that's brought to you by Castrol Edge. Thank you very much. our guests are here. I found an Old Spice commercial I like. I found a Ring Around a Collar commercial I like. I'm not sure how much of this we got into. We also have a clip from the audiobook Ghost, which is the book that we're going to be talking about in a second. And you did it, right, Dawson?
Yeah, it just got released on October 2nd of this year.
Did you do it from your in-home studio?
Yes, I did.
That's got to be nice, right?
Very satisfying. Yeah, it is nice. It's nice to be able to have a nice, good room to work in. And now I have no excuses for not working all the time.
What is your methodology? Because as a guy who's done 4 audiobooks, I can tell you that I think the first one or two, they just booked out Mocha Sound or Java the microphone or whatever. They book out these stupid places, and then they book them out for like 3 days. And your book is 320 pages, and I'm not a good reader, and then you got to go in there for like... It
marathon
is
marathon session.
You are just all you're in the ninth grade. You're back. Yep. You're back. The worst part of the thing you dreaded the most about junior high, you are back in it. I found in life my saying is always, you know, you could eat a Buick if you pulverized it, turned it into powder, and just sprinkled it a little bit on your cereal every morning. Eventually, you'd eat a Buick, and I'm much more that way with tasks. Like when we did the last one or the last two, like I would say to Dawson, what time we going on Friday? And he'd go, 1 o'clock. And I'd go, all right, I'm going to come in at noon, and we're going to see if we can knock out 20 pages. And we just knock
you
out
chip it away, you chip
20
away.
Pages. Yeah. And all of a sudden, it's not intimidating at all. Sometimes you go for a two-hour session. Sometimes you make it a 45-minute session. Sometimes you go, when's the show start? Like in 45, 50 minutes. Let's see if we can just knock out 10 pages. Mm. And then you get these little updates, like, where are we at? We're at the halfway point. You go, oh, good, I can see the end. And it's just easier.
Yeah,
that's definitely the way to do it.
That's definitely the way to do it, right?
Plug away a little bit, and then that way you can save your voice.
Oh.
That's a big thing. Yeah. You can't read for more than 5 hours. It'll kill you.
Yeah. Speaking of which, when I did my audiobook, they booked me for 5 straight days, Monday through Friday, 5 straight days, and it was taxing on my voice.
Yes.
It was the first time in my life I drank tea, because they're like, drink the throat coat tea.
Yeah.
And it actually worked a lot, but my voice was ragged.
Yeah, it's...
I don't speak as much as Dawson or you.
Well, when I did my... Oh, sorry. You were saying?
It's tough. And it's homework, and it's weird, and in a world of show business and freebies and Seth MacFarlane parties you don't get to go to, this is the one part that just feels like you're back in the eighth grade, mm-hmm. and it sucks.
Yep. Yep.
That weird, dready, and especially if you have issues with reading like I do. So, good on you, Dawson. Go
Thank
home
you.
And knock it out and do it at your leisure. And it's that kind of thing where... I would tell people all the time, half of work is really the schedule. It's not mm-hmm. the job. It's you having to do this when somebody else wants you mm-hmm. to do it. And that's half of the bad part. I think people think of work or the job as, oh, the job's like, no, it's having to be mm-hmm. here at mm-hmm. this time, at all the time, or whenever. That when you remove that element of it and you go, there's just the work, but it's completely on your schedule.
Yeah.
It's just a lot easier. All right. Why don't we play a clip that you pulled from the audiobook of
right.
Ghost, shall we? It's about 2 minutes long.
Let's do it. This is regarding Mike McGowan's first foray into undercover work.
Mike's going to be in here in a minute.
A few years out of Quantico, I was assigned to go undercover in frequent clubs owned and operated by members of Italian organized crime, hereafter called the Mob, or LCN, this thing of ours. The case agent, a former national championship football player from Notre Dame, gave me very specific instructions. Go hang around these joints and find shit out. Sure, boss. I was clueless and unprepared. Today, an FBI UCA about to go on an undercover assignment would receive a 5-page written operations order, clearly defining the specific goals, objectives, and targets. But in the late 80s, there was no formalized FBI undercover training. I'm lucky I didn't get killed. The case agent had two kinds of clubs in mind: illegal gambling joints and strip clubs. The first usually featured video poker machines, horse race simulcasts, card games, and sports betting. The people who frequented them were middle-aged or older, and all of their last names ended in a vowel. I was in my early 30s at the time, and I immediately stood out. Problem number one. Problem number two. Even though I had the street smarts to talk myself into the clubs, my lifelong aversion to gambling, due to my father's problems in that area, meant that I never wagered any money or understood the games. Over the course of a couple of weeks, this caught the attention of other gamblers, who were watching me like a hawk and would stop speaking to each other whenever I approached. One night, while guys were placing bets and throwing dice, a kind gentleman of around 80 came up to me, patted me gently on the back, and asked the obvious question. You're a nice kid, but what the fuck are you doing here, son? I got the hell out of there fast.
So 30 years later, this guy infiltrated the Italian mob twice, the Russian mob once, the outlaw motorcycle gang, put away countless public officials for corruption. And I believe he did his final undercover at either 67 or 68 years old. The FBI wouldn't let him retire at the end. It's an amazing book.
Were you talking about Michael?
Yeah.
It says he's 61, so that's it. But
spoiler alert, Dawson.
What says that on your bio?
Well, could be Dylan, could be Dawson. Something starts with a D. We'll figure it out. But, you know, did he just retire?
I believe in 2017.
That's just retiring in my book. So he still could have been 60 when he retired, which is old for out doing undercover
field work,
stuff.
As they say.
We'll get some clarification, and we'll talk about all that, El Chapo and all the crazy stuff that's going on. I'd like to find out about the Russian mob and all that. First, I'll tell you about betonline.ag. Mm-hmm. Sportsnet Challenge. So much fun if you want to get involved. You just join in at betonline.ag. Pick 'em, and you could win $25K. Use the code PODCAST1. Receive a 50% welcome bonus. And I need your help making picks so you can send them in. Because every week I win, I'll give five of you $100 credit on betonline.ag. What do you got?
You're not the only one who needs help making picks. Help me make my picks, because Adam and I are in a virtual tie on the season. 23-12 for the Ace Man, 23-11-1 for me. We both had good weeks. You had a much better week this week than I did. You went 4-1, including your best bet, which was the same as mine. The Rams over my 49ers took care of business, no problem. I, unfortunately, took a loss on the Ravens and Saints and the Eagles and Panthers. Both games were very, very close. I don't know if you watch football this weekend, but those are heartbreakers to watch for me. You only took a loss on the Jags. So 4-1 for you, 3-2 for me, but getting close as the season progresses.
All right, we'll bring in Ralph and Michael, and we'll talk about the world that most of us aren't ever exposed to. Okay, quick break, good sports, and we'll do that right after this.
Adam and Drew, back together again.
Hey, man.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, man. Why should people listen to us every single day, Drew?
Because they complain that we're not around anymore, and where are you? Won't you guys come back? And lo and behold, we've been back the whole time. They need to listen to us every day.
And I think the world needs a nice dose of us.
Yes. It's that time.
Every day.
Yep. Every
day. Podcast One and
Apple. It's healthy. It's healthy. It'll improve your soul.
Thank you.
Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew Pinsky, getting it on 5 days a week. The Adam and Drew Show, weekdays on Carolla Digital and Podcast One.
Ace and Shecky, let's do it. Good sports.
The Podcast One Sports Network presents Good Sports.
Hi and hello, sports fans. Welcome to a brand new episode of Good Sports here on Podcast One Sports. Dave Damashek here, Adam Carolla over there. Ace, I know that we're now in between weeks 7 and 8 of the NFL season, but I want to go back and get your thoughts on what happened two Sunday nights ago. A great game, a shootout, no defense to be found anywhere. Nevertheless, Mahomes, the kid versus the GOAT, Brady, all that stuff, good storylines. But Tyreek Hill got one of his three touchdowns and blew away the Patriots defense in the process. And as he got to the end zone, some Patriots fans dumped beer on him and gave him the middle finger. I don't know if you've heard.
Is he number 10?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the fastest guy.
Speed burner.
It's crazy, though. But I mean, I know there have been fast guys in the league and so on and so forth, but it is something to behold how fast that guy is. These guys are borderline. Most of them, maybe not most of them, but a lot of those guys in the NFL, in secondaries around the league, those guys ran college track. Like, they're you know.
You want that guy on your team because he can stretch the anus.
Well, I don't know if you got that. Because I work at the NFL, so I would know if you're getting that phrase right. And I don't think you nailed it.
Stretch the anus?
Yeah, no. I mean, like, yes, you stretch.
I've heard him say that.
Are you sure, though?
I watch,
though?
Like, NFL Game Day, and I'm a fan of Rich Eisen. I read his tweets. Sure. Or it's either field or anus. I don't...
The former sounds more accurate.
Anus?
I don't know what former means.
Oh, well, whatever, he can stretch.
The point is, okay.
It's one or the other. Or
yeah,
both.
Go with either.
I think either one will work.
That's the bottom line. Yeah, let's not nitpick, because either one that you slug in there.
Look, let's have it your way. He can stretch the field.
Or anus. I think, see, now that I say it, I realize you're right. Either one.
Right.
Interchangeable. Either way, what did you make of this beer? Well, it's not merely the deed of dumping a beer on a football player, which is pretty stupid. And I've encouraged Green Bay Packers, if they ever get into the end zone, to go the extra mile. They do the Lambeau leap. Grab a beer out of the closest fan and chug it. You'll get fined heavily by the league, but you'll be a legend for all of time. You'll certainly get beer sponsorships out the wazoo. Mm. Or anus.
And you know my thing that some young entrepreneurs got to get on, but no one has thus far, which is if you're from Minnesota or KC or one of the teams that are playing the Packers or one of the rivals, give me the biggest Packer rival.
Bears, maybe?
Bears, whatever. Mm-hmm. You get the big block of fudge. They're wearing the cheese heads. You'd be the fudge heads, thus the fudge Packers. It's hilarious. It's a block of foam. You just cut it. It's just as easy to make a fake
Packers plus fudge equals stretching the field.
Yes. Or you can say it that way.
Yeah.
You take that block of foam, instead of making it into a cheese head, you make it into a fudge head. And if you're on the Chicago Bears or the Vikings, you just wear the fudge head.
I'm predicting you also will get a fine for that one.
But I don't know. I feel like you'd just be in the audience. You know, I'm talking about the fans.
Oh, I thought you meant
that. No.
I thought you meant that, like, Mitch Trubisky goes out to the sideline before the game with us.
Please be serious. Come on, man. I'm saying,
I went too far.
If there was a C, let's just put it this way. Let's just say everybody at Soldier Field put on the fudge head when the Packers came in town. First off, do you think Joe Buck and Troy Aikman could make sense of it? I know Troy Aikman wouldn't know what was
Troy
going
Aikman,
on.
Troy Aikman posited a couple of nights ago that that podcast. Who listens to podcasts? So he's hipping now.
All right. So
he
wouldn't
get that one.
I don't think he'd get it, but it'd also be fun. And it's like they wouldn't tile it out or anything. They just have it, and people'd have to do like the slow math. I wouldn't want a whole explanation. You just...
Look at some fans look like they've painted their wait a minute.
Oh, all right, number one.
Can we get a cutaway to that director in the booth there?
Number
I don't think
two,
that's a good idea, Joe.
They are the Patriots fans are quietly the worst and the angriest and the whatever in the league because they're all kind of Matt Damon's character in
Good Will Hunting,
like smart and angry and violent, but with a sharp tongue. You know what I mean? Like Philly fans are drunk. They're inarticulate. You know what I mean? But they're not carve you up with the tongue and dump a beer on you and not angry. The Patriots fans, weird. It's a weird part of the country where they're angry that way. I said it.
It is a paradoxical region of the country. I mean, obviously very progressive in many ways politically and otherwise, but of course behind the times in sports when it comes to black athletes and, you know, often
more,
being the –
Yeah, more colleges per capita than any other region of the world, but yet more assholes who are drunk throwing down. But I didn't see where he got the beer dumped on him.
Well, it was middle fingers all around, and then beers being thrown on him. And as a result, I mean, people reacted quickly. People, you know, football, ex-football players and beyond said, outrageous, pounded the table action.
Can I say this? And look, I'm not looking for controversy, but if, in fact, you were going to dump a beer on somebody who enters the end zone from the opposing team with the football, it's going to have to be a black guy. I mean, it's not like Whitey does a lot of celebrating in the back of the end zone. Sure, a lineman may eventually catch up to the celebration.
It's conceivable that one day, but if you're going to wait for that.
But to say it's racist when 99% of guys celebrating in the back of the end zone are black, that's a tough putt because everyone who's carrying the rock and burning up the sideline and really stretching the anus, all those guys are black. So what are you going to do? You know what I mean? Like,
well, I don't know if I insinuated that there were racial overtones. Maybe there were. I don't know. But I do know this.
Well, in 2018, you dump a beer on a brother, there's got to be some racial overtones, right?
I don't know. I guess if you color it up with the past of, that region of the country again, I guess you're not insane for making that. But either way, the Patriots, here's what they've done. They have banned this guy who was 21 who did it, banned for life from the stadium, can never go back to the stadium, and facing two criminal charges. Gary, wow. Gary behind the glass.
I'd have to see it. Hey,
is that
Dylan,
worthy of a criminal charge?
Dylan, please look up the guy. If this guy's banned for life from the stadium, I will show you footage from a Monday Night Football game where the Giants fan jumped out of the second-story balcony and caught the extra point in the air.
I was at that game, and I'll tell you, that was in Soldier Field, and that was, so we're looking at the play here now. Tyreek Hill gets to the end zone, middle fingers abound.
Oh, they cut away very quickly, but yes.
Huh, I could swear I saw the beer splatter on him. Yeah, here we go.
I did not see that.
A criminal charge just seems a little bit severe.
My feeling with, I hate opposition players and touchdowns, but I love beer. So I feel like it would be
that's always
a Sophie's choice. And especially stadium beer, which is like $13 for a Coors Light. You know what I mean?
Yeah, if you want to get the guy's goat, if you want to get Tyreek Hill or the opposing player's goat, you go like, hey, Tyreek Hill, check this out. I'm drinking beer and you're not. Huh?
Right.
Yeah, you don't have everything going for you.
The guy at Soldier Field, I guess, who caught the extra point or the field goal.
One of
by
the great
jumping.
Mullets of all time.
One of the greatest athletic moves of all time. Like, you know, they all, oh, they have like Bo Jackson running up the wall out in center field after he went
for
a fly ball in the All-Star game or whatever. Like these feats. This guy's feat of jumping over the top, catching the extra point, landing on the ground. I'm just saying, if this guy is, if the guy you're talking about, and a great mullet too, if the guy you're talking about is banned forever from the stadium, this guy should have an all-access pass to any stadium at all times. Watch this, Dylan. This guy jumps off of the second story.
It's the timing that's so remarkable.
It's the timing.
About it.
Catches the ball in the air and drops 10 feet into the tunnel.
And the ball never even moves. But even by 2017 standards, that's a catch.
And he wasn't even wearing those sticky diver's gloves that these guys all with their Odell Beckham one-handers are making now. Yeah,
thank you for that.
If I were a coach, I would have this ready to queue up in any film session. And the second my elite wide receiver, this $14 million a year contract, dropped an 8-yard out, I'd go, show drunk guy with mullet. This guy's got a 4-beer buzz. He's
Rudy.
Got a mullet.
Rudy works harder than you, Vince Vaughn.
He jumped over the railing and caught the ball and brought it down into the tunnel. One of the greatest athletes of all time.
I'm with you.
All right, let me tell you about betonline.ag. College football, NFL football, greatest time of the year has arrived. Don't wait to make your online wagers. Head to betonline.ag to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Use the promo code PODCAST1. Receive a 50% sign-up bonus today. That's Podcast One for 50% sign-up bonus. BetOnline.ag, exclusive partner of Podcast One. Sportsnet, whether you love college football or NFL football, BetOnline.ag has it all, and you can get into the action today. Sign up today at BetOnline.ag. Use the promo code Podcast One for a 50% bonus when you sign up. Let's have some fun this weekend. Head over to betonline.ag. Take advantage of this incredible offer now. Betonline.ag. It is your online sportsbook experts.
Good All stuff right. today, Ace. It is fascinating to consider how, when this guy is 57 years old, if he attempts to go into the stadium, is anybody going to be like, nope, we've got
21 year old.
Yeah, we've got the computer aging program set up, and nope, everybody's going to be tuned.
Yeah, we used it for Whitey Bulger initially, but now we're using it to track.
We
down
got
people.
Our man. Nope, still no good. All right,
wait. People should go online. I don't know, Dylan. What should they type in? Like. Extra point.
Bears fan catches field goal. It'll come up.
It's the greatest feat ever, right?
And we'll put it on our social, too.
Okay.
It's so right. Robert Brooks catches a 99-yard touchdown pass in that game, and it's still, at best, the second most impressive feat that night, for sure. All right. We'll kibitz with you tomorrow on Good Sports 4 Now for Adam Carolla. Podcast One Sports out.